this color guy I'm telling you about. Would you believe it? He makes as much money as me.
Then he must be twice as smart as you.
From the KKFI studios in Midtown, it's time for Khadija and the White Guys. Good morning. I'm Keith Washburn.
And I am Khadija Hardaway. Toot toot, baby.
There's our toot toot. Our guests this morning, we have two of them, Greg Thomas, also known as Coach T, and David Smale, who wrote a book called Race in America. That is Race in America, what our show is about, A Call to Heal. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So, I've read your book all the way through, and I think that the biggest question that we can ask at the moment is, why conviction? Why an individual movement, you know, of individuals? Why not the system to change racism and the way it looks in America?
So to cue this up for our audience, basically in the book, Coach T and David go through, you know, it takes individuals. Each individual has to have the conviction to turn things around. And Khadija's saying, why conviction instead of the system?
Well, the system, you know, we've had hundreds of years of different things that have happened, and there's been progress, but it takes several hundred more years to get the thing exactly like we need to. But I think that if each person would look within their heart and do the right thing as far as how you treat your neighbor, we'll be fine regardless of what the government or whatever decides to do in that area.
I would add to that, the only problem is that the system is flawed in and of itself. So if we rely on a flawed system to make change, we're going to have a flawed change.
Well, why not rely on just improving the system so that it works in a fairness way? You're talking about 400 years of slavery. You think you can just change that with individuals? How long do you think a movement like that might take?
Well, it'll take a long time, but we have made tremendous progress and, you know, since even before our country, let's say 1600s, you know, before our country was even technically established, we've made progress, and we've continued to make progress. The civil rights movements from 55 to 65, roughly, or a little later, there was tremendous progress during that time with Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, and others. And after that, we've made tremendous progress. So
we've made tremendous progress, in my opinion, of joining hands together. Like me and Keith, we cool, you know. You and
David,
you guys are cool, but we haven't made progress and strides in the way that African Americans have a level playing field. To me, that's not saying a whole lot. I mean, I get it. I mean, I like friendship. I think that's an individual thing. And for me, I'm at peace with having friends of all backgrounds and all races and having a conversation. But at the end of the day, what does that do overall for the projection of what black people, African Americans, have been going through in this country?
If the system tells you you have to do something and you don't have personal conviction, it doesn't matter what the system says. So you have to have personal conviction for it. And instead of having personal conviction to follow a flawed system or even to change the system, which is going to take a lot longer, our premise is have a personal conviction to do something about it yourself and have personal conviction to, you know, to look at somebody else regardless of the color of their skin or their ethnic background or their religious background or whatever, look at that person as an equal.
I get that, but who is the conviction for? I mean, your book reads and it tells of a lot of experiences that you have had and encounter, and not all of them were good, that people, you know, inflicted racism on you. So,
yeah, you know, for our listening audience, these two gentlemen, one is black, one is white. So Khadija kind of made reference to that earlier, right? Would you guys, really, you can't even tell by a person's look anyway. Skin color is a whole different game than race sometimes, right? So, you know, for all I know, David could consider himself African-American. I probably have some African-American blood coursing through my veins.
I don't think he would want to do that. I mean, we had the lady from the NAACP who claimed she was black, and she's still claiming it, and everybody thinks she's a little insane. I like seeing him as a white guy, though. You know what I mean? I think that rests along in your ability to do whatever it needs to help with a collective effort.
Yeah, exactly, Khadija, because, you know, people, if Greg had written the book by himself or with a black co-author, it would, maybe the white community would look at it, oh, he's just complaining about the way he was treated growing up. The fact that he and I agree on so much of this, in fact, I would say it's fair to say I pushed him a little bit to dig a little deeper. As we did this book, I asked him, well, what about that? What about that? What about that? And we kept pushing that way. And as a white guy who's experienced white privilege through my life, I thought I had a good voice to be able to add to Greg's voice, you know, that premise. And this is, here's what it comes down to. If I look at Greg as less than me because he's got a better tan than I do, that's a problem right here in my heart. That's a problem that doesn't, it doesn't matter where he's from, what he believes, it's strictly a matter that I'm judging him on something that's totally out of his control.
It sounds pretty kumbaya to me.
I love it. Khadija just being real.
Yeah, that's okay.
This is why we have Khadija and the white guy show.
It sounds to me, you know, I like to be straight up. And slavery was not an easy thing for African Americans. I don't know how easy it was for white people. I know they capitalized off of it. The proof is around the country, and you can see it.
Yes.
So to sit here and tell me that just because we're kumbayaing together, hell, slaves and their masters did that, but yep, it didn't make any difference at the end of the day to the success of an African American. And that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to get to the bottom line of how is this book in conversation alone, because I often bring this up all the time, is that how is this conversation alone going to change? Because I have plenty of white friends, but nothing in my world has changed because I have white friends and because they understand privilege. Nothing in my world has changed. So I'm asking, what is the progress rate that you think we will all be on the same playing field financially? So, you know, in a class state, not just in a black and white state, because black and white, we see that as a disconnect and we're not united. But the bottom line is I could care less if I'm united with different people or not. I really care about my livelihood and what I leave for my children. I think most people feel that way. And African Americans have been slighted for over 400 years.
Very true.
And so I'm just challenging you in your book to understand, like, 400 years versus to the future, what is the future going to look like based upon conviction and individuals saying that I want to change?
Well, it's going to take like 700-800 years to get it completely even, if that much. So that's not what I'm looking for, a total equality. It just won't happen. The system has been set up and it's been going like it has for so many years. So in the book, we don't talk about getting it perfect. We're talking about how you function in a day-to-day basis in our society and how you treat people.
The other thing that we talk about in there is I never owned a slave. I never had, you know, I personally have not been a part of a system from 400 years ago. What I can change is what I can do moving forward. And I remember the race riots in Kansas City in 1968. And I remember as a 10-year-old saying, why are those people fighting? And my grandfather and my parents said to me, they're fighting because they're different races. And I said, what does that matter? So I have tried to live my life that it doesn't matter what color you are, treat somebody equally. And what this book has challenged me to do is to look at every single situation and say, am I treating somebody differently because of their race or because of something that's beyond their control? And you know, you ask the question, why the conviction? Because without conviction, we're not going to get anything done. No matter what the system is, no matter what the government says, if we don't believe it personally, we're not going to get it done.
You know, one thing I want to interject here is that I don't think you gentlemen, I guess I want to ask this. You're not saying that the system is not important. What I hear you're saying is it's also important for each individual to make a decision on how they're going to treat other people. So the system is important. You're not saying don't work on the system. You're saying let's work on ourselves. We know we can do that, and we can also work with other people on the system at the same time. It's both and. Is that what I hear?
That's not what I heard.
I agree with that statement, though.
Yeah, and okay, and so we will change the system by changing individual responsibility. We will change if we are convicted to make changes. The system will change. The system's not perfect now, so.
How will the system change just by conviction?
Because if we're convicted to make change,
strategically though, what would happen after me and Keith got together? I could see what the benefits of me and Keith getting together, absolutely, from this show. You know, that is a movement. That is something that has happened and been created. I could see what happened with you guys because of this book. But beyond that, and I mean really the depth of what the system is, how are you going to change that? Because the depth of the system is what is crushing African Americans. How are you going to change that? Just after the conviction, what comes after that? Because your chapter 6, is it?
Education.
Education, yeah. Okay. That's a good one.
By education, part of what you mean, Coach, is that by educating next generations, is that what you mean? You don't literally mean by, you know, K through 12, although it could happen there. You're talking about us passing it along to the next generation and then passing along to the next generation and so forth. Is that what you mean by education?
Correct. Partly that. And then also with you, when you start off with younger kids, let's say third, fourth grade, they're taught to come to school with an attitude of gratitude, and they come to school to respect the teachers. Because I've been in schools for 35 years, and in a lot of cases that doesn't happen. There's very little respect. So if a parent teach a kid to respect the teacher and they do well in school, then when they get out on the street, they respect police and they respect military, then things will go much better for them in their life. So there's a change in that situation, and that's going to eventually help make their lives better. And then if it's in conjunction, then I think our society will be better.
So I just want to go back to a few things and then hit on a point in chapter 1 before we take the caller, okay? You said you never owned slaves. I hear a lot of people saying that. And to you, that may not make a difference. I've never been a slave. But because my ancestors have been slaves and they came out of the bondage of slavery, trying to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and because of the climate of the country at that time, I am no longer an heir to the inheritance of the land that my ancestors had. And that is a direct result of slavery. However, there are plenty of slave owners who have
lineage.
What's the other one I was looking for? Generations of people that have come behind them who have benefited from slavery and that are still benefiting from slavery. So when I hear that line, "I've never owned a slave," it's condescending a little bit to me. It doesn't really draw to make much sense, because if you can benefit off of what has happened in the past, you are just as responsible at this point to make a difference. That's just my opinion. Secondly, I'm let you respond to that. In chapter 1 in your book, I really, really love the fact that you started off with the Little Rock Nine. What gets me bothered so many times about history and African Americans is that there's always the first one. And that to me is just staring the mentality of crabs in the bucket. The idea of Little Rock Nine, that 9 black people walked through the door at the same time and there was no first, it was a group of them, made a tremendous difference. I am so sick of hearing this, "You're the first black African this and that." It should be, "You're African American, you did something great," and not "You're the first." It should be a number of us getting through the door, not just one at a time. So I'll let you respond and then we'll take our caller.
Okay, well, my response is, when I said I've never owned a slave and you've never been a slave, it's to say we can't change what happened 150 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. What we can change is our attitude today and what we do moving forward. I would bet you are no more mad that there was slavery than I am.
I wouldn't agree.
Okay.
We have
no way of knowing if that's true. But
well, you've never had your privilege stripped from you. You've never had to go without. So it's easy to make reference to that. But you've never been in that situation. I have, and I still live the remnants of slavery. I still do. I still hear the stories of my ancestors who were enslaved, who were freed and still enslaved, who worked hard and still had their property stolen from them and were still beaten, still killed. So it's easy to draw a parallel of how we should be thinking alike, but we're not.
Okay.
And I'm just being honest.
Yeah, I understand your point.
I understand your point too, Khadija, because I've never not had, and you gave several good examples, but I have not gotten jobs because I'm white. Okay.
But you have more of a chance because you're white.
I understand, but you're talking about you're pinning my attitude, what you think my attitude is, based on circumstances of the general white person, which is just as bad as me saying white or black people should just get over it. I'm not saying get over it.
I'm
saying
the
only way we're going to make this work, that we're going to have equal opportunity, is if you and I share the opinion that the color of skin does not matter. And all the past cannot be changed. What we have to do is change our attitude.
That is so easy to say when racism is not inflicted upon you, sir. That is easy to say.
And that's a true statement. You're right. And so it's not going to be perfect. And I realize that. And it'd be a waste of energy to expect it to be perfect. So you have to take what the situation you have and maximize that with your family and the people that you, your circle of friends.
And that gets us back to your original question. It's easy to say, it's much harder to do. The only way we'll do it is if we're convicted. So that's why conviction is important, because I am convicted to make this change.
I believe you. I believe you. But I also believe that in a lot of, people understanding, there comes a time where black people need to be straight up about what they feel and how they're going through a situation so that you know, so that you'll know why you're not invited to the meeting or why people feel uncomfortable or untrustworthy. Because, you know, there should be some kind of sensitivity that comes in between that. And I think you have it, but I also believe that at this point, I am educating, you know, at the same time, because not all black people experience the same way, but we do all experience racism if you're black. That's just the bottom line. I mean, and to tell me that there's a certain way you should move about life and it inflicts upon you every day, you can't tell me that, because you don't experience that in the way that we experience it. And I'm not trying to say that to be mean. I'm just saying that as a truth point. But before we move further, we have a caller, and they're going to be lining up. I want to say this. If you're listening from Facebook, remember to turn your radio on so that you can hear the caller. Also, turn your radios down when you call in. So we're going to go ahead and take our first caller. As soon as Keith, he's the man. He's back here working things. So our first caller, you're on the air. State your name and what part of town you're calling from.
Hi, this is James. I'm calling from Midtown. How are you?
Thank
you,
James. Thanks for calling in this morning.
I'm going to say a few things that people don't want to hear. Okay. First of all, the gentleman said that the previous lady called in and said, how long is it going to take until the field is even? And the gentleman threw out an arbitrary number, 700 years. I don't understand why there has to be a sort of even playing field that maybe the government or the collective conscience has to come up with. What happens to the individual and their decisions that they make? For instance, this idea of slavery having to do with anything that's going on today. I'm going to back up the person that said that he never owned a slave. I've never owned a slave. I've never met a slave. But you can become a slave in your own mind by thinking that there's this sort of ghost out there that's keeping you down. The capitalist market that we live in right now does not base people on their color or their race or their ethnicity or their gender. If that was the case, then a lot of these companies would hire a bunch of dumb white guys to do nothing because they're white. Why is it that there's diversity? Because they pick the person that's more qualified than the person that interviewed alongside them. Now, if we continue to convince ourselves that there's some sort of the man out there keeping us down, then we're chasing a ghost and we're not accountable. Again, another interesting point. 20 years, during the time of the Civil Rights Act, single parent, black single parents, it only made up about 20% of the group, single parents among black people. 30 years after that, it went from 20% to 70%. There's another indication, there's another reason why this why black people are having problems. I mean, we're trying to blame somebody. And then I heard something about one more point. The last call, the lady said that
it was
some sort of a privilege. I'm almost done. That's some sort of a privilege. And again, I go back to the fact that the market, the capitalist market, does not go by race or gender. This whole idea that women that make less than men, and that's a lie. But you said that the guy has some sort of a privilege. That's garbage. The market hires people that are qualified. If you had a dumb white guy and a brilliant black guy, and I own a business, I'm going to hire the guy that's more qualified. I don't care if he's black or white.
Sir, that's just your opinion, and I'm afraid that's not the truth. But that's all the time we have for you. We're going to let them reply to you. I just want to reply back to chasing a ghost. Black people in this country are not chasing ghosts unless they're on drugs. So let's keep it straight that there is a problem in this country, and African Americans are at the brunt of that problem. And we get the short end of the stick, regardless of how you see chasing a ghost or not.
And before they respond, I do want to say this, and that is we welcome all callers. And so thank you for calling in. That's what makes this show what it is to get various viewpoints. So, James, thanks for calling in. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, usually, like I said, I get to speak a lot of places, schools, churches, businesses, and I don't get into arguing about, what year and all that kind of stuff, because you can go on for hours and hours with that stuff. My point is, from today, the people you deal with, if you treat people with respect and dignity and you create a culture of honor and respect, then you're going to have a much better chance of being able to survive in this society. It won't be even. So I'm not looking for it to be even. It just won't happen. There's people of all races that get the short end of the stick
in
many cases.
To be even, I don't think anybody is speaking of being even, but to be fair, we all make our individual choices, but can we make them on a fair playing ground? I mean, like, if you play a game of baseball, aren't the rules the same for everybody?
It's supposed to be, but...
America, playing the game of financial gain, the rules are not the same for everyone.
Well,
and they're set up to put some people behind.
The system, you're correct, especially in education, the way, if you've been in different schools, an example would be like the average kid that would go to, let's say, Ruskin, 4 years of Ruskin versus 4 years of Rockhurst or Olathe Northwest, something like that. There's a night and day difference between what goes on in the classroom and outside the classroom. So, you just can't make it completely fair. It'd be nice. That'd be nice to be able to do that, but you have to see your situation and know that you're in a situation where maybe it's not fair. You're going to, let's say, an East or Northeast that won't give you the same type of opportunities you would get at other schools. So you have to go above and beyond the call of duty in the classroom, outside of the classroom, to have an opportunity. So I wouldn't go around trying to make things fair. I mean, to make it as fair as possible, I agree with your statement there, and I would want to do that, but realize that it won't happen, so you got to take advantage of your situation.
You know, I'm going to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends. I choose who my friends are, no matter what the color is. But if you can't help me to move my people ahead, there is no reason, really, other than feeling good, that we should be associated. There's no reason. I get people ask me all the time, come over here and talk about what it is like to be in the African-American community, how poor they are, what it is, what they need, but we're not going to go shake a bush. What do I need to tell you that for? Why do we need to be friends?
Now, this is a really good point that Khadija's making here, which is, hey, have me come over and speak. Tell me what she. I actually met Khadija at a speaking engagement. She was on part of a panel, and I think the panel was called "Our Neighbors East of Truth," something
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yes.
And Khadija she wasn't very happy really with that, to tell you the truth. But she did do the panel, and we got together afterwards, had coffee. We decided we wanted to do a radio show. But what she's saying here is really on point, which is have me come over and do a panel. But besides that, I want to see you actually put some teeth in changing the system. I want you to come alongside me. I really hear that. Is, you know, it's all well and good for our neighbors, let's say, wherever they are, Johnson County, wherever you are, to stay in your homes and have us over for a cup of coffee. But where is the change in the system going to happen? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. In a nutshell, okay. You did okay, that very well.
Well, well, let's take another caller. We got a bunch of callers. As Khadija said, we got a bunch of callers lining
we'll
up.
We'll take a caller, and then I want to go back to something in a book.
Ooh. Okay, you're on the air. Your name and area town you're calling in from?
Yeah, this is Maurice Copeland. How are you doing?
Maurice Copeland. How you doing?
Yeah, this is a beautiful. This is really beautiful, and this is what we need. This needs to be a continuation. First of all, the person that said the only way that we're going to solve this thing, no, that's you saying that. We've never been in the conversation. I'm a black man, and I'm about to go to Arkansas, and I'm about to walk on land that my people had after slavery, 237 acres.
Wow.
Our land, a lot of black people, their land was taken from them, just taken. They were moved off. They were run out. They were hung. That is where we have inequality and injustices. That's where the privilege for someone to do that to us, and we never getting anything for it, justice. Being able to go to, do you know that we couldn't go to court? And this is up in my lifetime. I'm old enough to where I have seen slaves. Ex-slaves have held me in their arms. I'm going to walk on the property where we lived. Now, this privilege thing, anyone that can't see where white privilege has held us back, they must be blind or in deep denial. Look, this capitalistic system was sustained on slavery. We worked free for 300 years, free, and we gave every resource to the owners and to corporations, even to the government.
Godfather, you're going to have to wrap it out.
Our lives was insured by white owners, that when a slave died, they were paid. They were paid by insurance companies. We know what the cost of our labor was. Give me justice. Give my people justice. That is the only way
Godfather.
We can straighten this stuff out. Goodbye.
Thank you, Godfather.
Thanks for calling in this morning, Maurice.
Do you want to respond to him?
He makes some tremendous points, you know, but, you know, there again, the how you actually do that to someone's satisfaction is, like I had a friend of mine said, well, reparations, how much do I owe you, you know, and who do I give it to, that type of thing. So I understand it's a tricky situation. He makes very good points.
I want to go to, I think this is still chapter one.
Ooh.
And you were talking about you were in the seventh grade. You were on a baseball team. I want you to tell me what the climate was like, because that was the year I was born. So I just drew a parallel to the year I was born. And so you say, I stayed involved in sports, and that directed a lot of my youth. I only did baseball on the team by the seventh grade.
Right.
That's where this chapter starts.
Right. So that's...
So what was the climate of the country like in 1973? What was it like for you?
For me,
I love this because Khadija's, I guess, she doesn't exactly remember 73. I do remember 73.
Well, I was just
born. No, I hear you. I totally hear you. This is really good.
Oh,
I love this.
Well, you know, where we lived on like 34th and Paseo. There's a fire station there now. I remember in 1968 when Martin Luther King was assassinated, April 4th. The very next day, April 5th, I looked out my house and I saw tanks going down the street on Paseo. And, you know, Vietnam was going on, so you used to seeing tanks and jungle warfare, but not in front of your house. And so that image, I'm 58 now, but I was 9 years old when that happened. My parents shielded me from a lot of the things that were, there were a lot of things that happened in Kansas City, mm-hmm. you know, from the early 60s, sit-ins and Cressy's and things like that. And there was rioting going on in 68, but I
never. Cressy's, y'all. You hear that?
Okay. That's old school stuff there, you know, and ISIS theater and all that kind of stuff. I guess I'm getting up there pretty good. But a lot of the things that were going on in our country in the 60s and early 70s, I knew nothing of that. My parents just shielded me from that. They stressed education. I was part of DSEG, desegregation, so I went to Faxon, and then I was shipped to Volcker Elementary, so we got bussed way over there. And it was a tremendous thing. I thought we had, you know, every fantastic facilities. Mm-hmm. The people treated us well, so I didn't have any issues until we got to high school.
So you also gave reference to Fairyland Park.
Oh, yeah. When I was a little kid, you know, if you think of Worlds of Fun today, back when I was a kid, you could blacks could only go to Fairyland Park on Easter. Some people joked around and call it National Negro Day. Only one day out of the year could you go to Fairyland Park. So if they did that today with Worlds
kinda
of
like
Fun.
Like the Kansas City Zoo today. No, my bad. Sorry. Sorry, Kansas City.
So that was, that, you know, I didn't know anything about that, you know. But I remember going to Fairyland as a little kid with my dad and parents. But I didn't know that you blacks could only go one day out of the year. So
okay. I mean, that is just amazing to me. And there are folks that still don't know that. I mean, people that have listened to our show know it because we've talked about it before. But that's just an amazing part of our history in Kansas City.
I can only draw a parallel to the date I was born. I mean, you know, I hear a lot of stories. People say, well, yeah, you know, right then it was right there on Prospect. We couldn't go. And my parents wouldn't let us go anyway. But Anyway, that was a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. But we have a caller.
We have a couple of callers.
We're going to take a caller, and then we're going to ask another question in between. So, caller, state your name, what part of town you're calling from. You're on the air.
You're on the air.
Yes. This is Melvin from Midtown.
Hey, Melvin.
Hey, how y'all doing? I think it's a real hot topic, and it's such a broad topic. But I think I go along a little bit with your guest that talked about it's an attitude overhauling. And I think that many of the whites need to be, I shouldn't say use the word need to be, but they should be more educated with what your caller that called in and talked about the property and the land, 200 acres that was owned by blacks and that was stripped from them. And I think more of that type of education would alter the attitude and the thinking of many of the whites that are saying, we need to get over it. And that is one of the hardest things. We can get over it if we get some of that 200 acres back. And
no, that's a good
I
way
think
to say
that
it.
That would help.
Yeah, figuratively, that is a great way to say it figuratively, is if we get part of that 200 acres, that'll be the day when we can get over it. I love it, Melvin. Any further comment before we let you go?
Well, I think one of the things is that you guys have a real hot topic. We could talk about this until doomsday. However, I agree as well that many of these things are not going to be changed because it's so embedded in our society. We have a capitalist administration in that's only enriching themselves, mother, brothers, sisters, and
sir, when
in-laws.
Has the White House not been capitalist?
Well, when I say it's so prevalent,
even Obama got rich.
Like it's in your face, Khadijah.
Obama got rich.
Definitely, it's really in your face now.
But it was in your face then. It was in your face then. I'm confused.
Well, not as like it then, Khadijah. That now the daughter is capitalizing. She has no talents in terms of politics. Only thing, the talent she have is making dresses and shoes and those kinds of things.
So you got,
and she's capitalizing it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you
good
saying
point.
We got more capitalism.
Right.
Yeah.
It's on
more,
top of capitalism.
It's more in your face now.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for calling,
Thank
Melvin.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you all for this topic. Beautiful topic. Keep it on. Keep it on.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Melvin.
So let's go back to the book.
Ooh.
I'm going to read this excerpt from Chapter 3, Root of the Problem, and we're on page 35. And this goes to, I think, the heart of what you've been saying. We're going to digest this a little bit. So if it's not any of those issues that cause racism at its core, what is it? It's an issue of the heart, plain and simple. If you think you're better than me, or if I think I'm better than you, that's a problem. Let's call it what it is. It's a sin. Issue that manifests itself in racism in America. Kind of perplexed because I do believe that people who discriminate are in sin. I believe that. However, there's a lot of people who have been taught racism that are good people. I believe that, yeah, if conviction happened, yeah. But at the root, there is a philosophy being taught, and that philosophy has to be broken down. And that philosophy is not going to be broken down with individuals that you come across like Keith and this man right here. There are people who are literally have this agenda at hand. And yeah, it's a sin, but we all know that we all sin, and one sin is no greater than the other. So what makes this one so powerful in America? What's the difference? And it goes back to, you know, the individual thing. We're right back there. Like, break that down for me.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Dave?
Well, the main focus of the book is the fact, is this point. And I'm glad you brought that up, that it doesn't matter what the system, what the political system is, doesn't matter any of that. It's a matter of our heart. And if Greg and I look at each other differently because he's black and I'm white, if he looks at me as less than, or if I look at him as less than, that's a problem. If we can get past that, and I can't change you, I can't change Keith, I can't change Greg, the only person I can change is me. If I look at somebody as, and you'll read it all the way through here, you've read the whole book, if I look at every single person as created in the image of God, there's no way I can look down on them. And if each person looks at other people in that same way, there's no way we can look down. If we're all looking at each other as created in the image of God, as special beings, if you believe in God and you say that person's created in the image of God, you're going to lift them up, not look down on them, and that's going to be the root of the change.
I kind of have an issue with that, though, because we're individuals and we are different. I mean, let's give an example of a plant. You know, you may have one plant, but it has several different species in that plant. Humans are the same way. So I don't want to take away from the fact that we're different. We are different. There's nothing wrong with that. Being different connects us like a puzzle piece. You know, I'm not afraid to be different. I'm not afraid to see people's differences. But I am afraid when we don't see each other as human. So I don't agree with the phrase so much as I.
Okay, and that's what I'm trying to say. We are different, you know. Greg's tan is much better than mine. You know, Greg is black. I'm white. We are different.
Yes, you're right.
No. We can you know, we can sing from the same piece of music, but we don't all have to sing the same part. We can sing. Okay. We can sing harmony, and we can embrace the differences, not use those differences to look down on each other.
I'll accept that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's good. You want to take a caller?
Sure.
All right, let's see who we have. You're on the air. Tell us your name and area town you're calling in from.
This is Jack and Shawnee.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for calling in today.
Good morning. You know, I think the problem is you have the rich billionaires who are pitting the working poor against each other. They're dividing us.
Oh, yeah.
They're dividing working black against working white. They divide Muslims against Christians, et cetera, et cetera. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh. You're still on the
you're
air.
There.
You're good.
There.
Yeah, and so I think you know, the billionaires take pleasure in this. All the time they get us arguing and squabbling amongst ourselves, they're distracting us from what they're really doing, which is ripping us off. They're ripping us off. Trump and his cronies up there in the White House are making all sorts of deals, and Ivanka Trump's getting her trademarks in China and all kinds of stuff. So while they are making off with our money, they like for us to be divided and to squabble so that we don't come together. Because if all the working people came together in their own interests and voted in their own interests.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Well, hold on a second. To tax the rich. We need to tax the billionaires. They're the enemy. They are the 1% is the enemy. You need to tax the billionaires, tax the banks, and spread that wealth around. And that's the answer.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, good comment.
Okay, so back to the book. Second paragraph, same book. It's not a recent phenomenon. The most profound aspect of attitude is slavery in America. if you enslave a person and take away his or her freedom, it's because you think they're less valuable as a person than you. In fact, slavery was rationalized by religious groups early in our nation's history by devaluing blacks as less than human. The prominent attitude was that blacks didn't deserve their freedom. I'm just going to be stern about this, okay?
Okay, bring it.
Blacks were not considered humans. You were considered a product, sort of like cattle. And I like where you brought up in the book where, you know, you talked about cattle slavery and channeling people. So when you look at us from that perspective, there was no feelings of a human being. We were just looked at as a product. We still are a product in this country based upon the capitalist values that this country encompasses. So I think it's the attitude of slavery is there. However, it has been a tool for financial gain and to build this country. So when we look at ourselves, I mean, I look at myself as a person, but the way America looks at African Americans and black people are products. And it even states that when it comes to how the slave owners used to use their black slaves for votes. You know, you were counted 2/3 for a vote. And that was just because you were considered wealth and not a person. So I wish that we would just call it what it is. You were a product for capitalist society. And once we start being pinpointing and saying things directly as they are, we can give true credence to fixing them. But if we sugarcoat them, I feel like that's sugarcoated a little bit, like this attitude of slavery and devaluing humans. It's really sugarcoated. You didn't really see us as a human at all.
You're exactly right. What we talk about in the book in Chapter 3, there's a little bit of history. In 1669, they had the Casual Killing Act. And then I kind of think about when they say Black Lives Matters, which that's kind of gotten off base in some crazy areas there as well. But I see the need for something like that because the Casual Killing Act of 1669 meant that you could just kill a black, it didn't matter because they weren't human. And that, so
for sport, like you kill a duck, or
if you were a master and you beat one to death, so well, it doesn't count, you know, because of the Casual Killing Act. And so that was on the books for, I couldn't find when it ended, but I'm sure well into the 1800s. And then you had the Three-Fifths Compromise that you talk about, because the South needed the voting power for representatives. And then it's like, well, we can't count them all as an individual person, or else, because there's so many of them, so you can count 3/5 of them.
They weren't counting them as individual persons. They were counting the stock of the slave owner and giving it to the owner as a vote. They didn't count you as a human being. You weren't even considered that.
You
were considered because of the vote that the white man could get because you were his product.
And so what people don't realize is the effect of that, how that affects even today to a degree. Now, there are people that have been able to come out and do tremendous things. You know, the LeBron James of the world, Dr. Ben Carson, people like that have done real well. So people look and say, hey, why can't you do that?
Doesn't make me feel fuzzy.
Right. So, but when you look at the systems, and I've dealt with systems as far as education, as far as business, as far as the church, there are still systems in place that still it's not where it needs to be, we'll put it like that.
You know, I get excited about Dr. King, the Maya Angelos. What's the guy that took the knee? Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick. We talk about him in Chapter 5.
I get excited about people like those, but these entertainers, they just entertain me. That's about it. Well, we have a caller. State your name and what part of town you're calling from.
Yeah, right before we go to our caller, I do want to say our phone number this morning because we haven't given that out. Most of the callers probably know it because they're some of our regular callers.
I apologize.
816. No, we're good. 816-931-5534. That's 931-5534. Caller, you are on the air. Name and area town you're calling in from. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'm Ashley Thomas, and I'm calling from Leavenworth, Kansas.
Hey, great. Thanks for calling, Ashley.
Yes, I'm just going to make a comment. I'm a young black woman, so about 24 years old, and I'm learning things as I go. I'm learning a lot now than I ever did before, and I see it. I see it in our people, our young people. And
close your door, sweetheart.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see it in our young people. I see it what happened before, and I see how a lot of people don't understand that it's like, how do I see it? I see how people, they're not waking up. Like, they just see it as, oh, it's a capitalism. 1% of the people, they need to start taxing, make sure the poor gets rich and the rich needs to be equal to everyone. And I don't think that's true. I really think we are all part of one race. That is a human race, H-U-E, human race. And we need to come together and try to figure out what we can do as a people. Because really, a lot of people that are in charge, they don't care about what the blacks went through, what we went through. They don't care about what's going on now. Like, as we speak, our birth certificates, our Social Security, clearly states that we are their product. And
ma'am, do you have a question, or can you wrap your comment up?
Okay, please. That's all I have to say.
Hey, thanks for calling, Ashley. We appreciate it. Yeah. So, and we got a poem. Coach T, you ready with the poem?
I'm ready. I guess I'll get it a little.
Let's see if it's going to work for us this morning. Okay, I'll play the music.
Toot his horn, y'all. Toot in the studio.
Yeah, after. Some of the things that happened after I wrote the book, I still had a lot of questions. So I wrote a poem called I Have a Question. So this is my first time breaking it out.
All right. Let's see. Is this about where we want to be? So I'm trying to play the music for you.
The title is I Have a Question. As we watch things unfold in our nation, especially in the last 2 to 3 years, I have a few questions that maybe some of you may have a few answers. Why do we sing God Bless America at some games? Is God obligated to bless us no matter what we do? Why do TV and radio personalities say things like thoughts and prayers in response to a tragedy? What are we to think about, and who are these prayers supposed to go to? Why is it that at times when an actor or an athlete receives an award, they'd like to thank God or even Jesus? Did God want the New England Patriots to beat Atlanta in the Super Bowl, the Cavaliers to beat Golden State in the NBA Finals, Clemson to beat Alabama in the NCAA football, or North Carolina to beat Gonzaga in the NCAA basketball? What would happen if you stood up in a high school in Damascus, Syria, and said that Jesus is Lord? What would happen if you said Jesus is Lord in a Washington, D.C. classroom? Why is it that Americans many times just assume that you automatically get to go to heaven when you die, or even that you get to go to a, quote, better place? Do we have anything to do to enjoy this benefit, or is it just given to us because we're Americans? Why is it that we expect our college, professional athletes, entertainers, politicians, etc., to act like Tim Tebow? But if they do, we criticize or ridicule them. If they act just the opposite and do all types of evil and wickedness, we eventually criticize them anyway. Why is it that if a gunman shoots and kills an 8-month pregnant mother, we charge him with 2 murders? But if a doctor aborts that same baby, he gets a financial reward. I'm just a bit curious, as our youth seem to grow up confused about what's right and wrong. What will bring them the most success and happiness in life? Is it whoever makes the most money wins? Or who gets the most women? Has the most and best cars or Super Bowl rings? The most titles in your chosen field? I'm just curious, after watching or hearing about things like the Columbine shooting, Oklahoma City bombing, Orlando shooting, Charleston church shooting, Tulsa riots of 1921, the JFK assassination, the Reverend Martin Luther King assassination, and many other events too numerous to count. Is it okay for people to just do whatever they feel is right in their own eyes, or do we have a level of decorum or respect that is due others? I can see how a young person, or even an older person for that matter, can be confused in today's society. I'm just wondering, in today's climate, is it okay for me to decide to honor Jesus Christ and all that I attempt to do to the best of my abilities? In doing that, I'm sort of meaning to look at you as my neighbor. And as my neighbor, I'd attempt to honor you by trying to do what's best for you, to say things that would bless and encourage you and not harm or curse you. If you're having any type of struggle in your day, is it okay for me to try to bring some encouragement to your life? Can I attempt to lighten your load in any way possible? Can I offer you at least a smile and pray that you may have a day that you would realize that Christmas was designed with you in mind, as Jesus chose to do the baby thing and put on flesh to help us in our struggles? Can I also remember that Easter was also designed for you, and that same Jesus chose to do a very uncomfortable an unflattering thing by being nailed to an old rugged cross to redeem us from our sin nature that we seem to have? Is it okay in 2017 America to believe that it's all done for us? But if you choose to believe a bit differently or just the opposite, can we still be friends? And you not want to blow me up, beat me up, slander me, or put me in jail or vice versa? I'm okay with loving you just as you are. Is that okay with you? Thank you.
Oh, that was beautiful. Let me give you some snaps in a circle and a Z formation.
I'm glad we got that in. Coach, that was great.
That was amazing. So let's take a caller, and then I got another excerpt of the book I'm going to read to you.
All right. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and area? Well, our caller has left us.
Poem was too long.
So they must have hung up.
No, it's perfect. It was great.
Yeah, I got a quote, and this kind of goes a little bit with our topic this morning. I read this last week. Let me see what you guys think of this. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. That's by Dr. King.
Ooh, that's very true.
Good stuff.
Okay, so
do you want us to answer Keith, or do you want to?
Sure. Go ahead.
I mean, to me, I use this a lot when I teach Bible classes, that you know, just like darkness is not the opposite of light, it's the absence of light. Cold is not the opposite of heat, it's the absence of heat. Hot and cold can't coexist. Light and darkness can't coexist. Evil and good can't coexist. Love and hate can't coexist. Hate is the absence of love, not the opposite of love.
Okay, well put.
Yeah. So, another parallel with your book, okay? You talked about being an athlete quite a bit and some of your experiences and how you think that, athletics can bridge the gap. I had some similar situations happen to me as an athlete. One in particular, we were, I believe, in Kearney. No, Sedalia Smith Cotton. And it was the basketball teams. And at the time, I was on a JV basketball team playing varsity. But we took a trip down there with the boys' varsity team and their JV team. We were greeted by rocks, spit. And when we stepped into the arena, we were cheated. Every team was cheated. And if we argued, our coaches was told to sit down, boy, don't talk. The sheriff was bought in. So were several deputies. And I didn't understand why we stayed and played that game. Because to me, it didn't feel like harmony. I've also witnessed that at track meets and cross country meets being cheated out of medals for disqualifications or that wasn't really there or things of that nature. So I'm trying to understand. I mean, I get the competitiveness helps an individual be stronger and compete in the world. But from my experiences, I don't think that basketball, track, cross country brought a unity to me with other people that I encountered. I think I was tormented more by the encounters I had. And say I took them into my being and say that I hated white people, no. My dad would be the first to tell you that I would be the first one to bring someone home. But at the same time, I didn't feel like it was a unity thing. I mean, I ran track at Park College, and we had to wear reflectors because we were black when we ran on the highway for fear of being ran off of the highway or off the road. So I just don't have the same encounter that you have. But I do think sports made me stronger. How is it that you can see unity and something great for individuals happening, like you explained in this book, happening for individuals through sports? Because I didn't have the same thing.
We just have about less than 1 minute.
Ooh, wow.
Okay. Summarize it in a minute, Greg.
Well,
Wait. Okay. So in the page 57, I don't share this to toot my own horn. He said, toot, toot, baby, in there. I just want you to know that. I love that. Okay, go ahead. Okay. In 1 minute.
1 minute. Wow. my experience is I've got a chance to travel all over the country, meet all kinds of people. I've been a coach for 35 years, worked with kids in the city, country, suburbs all over. And when they get to see different people working together on a team situation, it has benefited them and it will benefit them throughout their
life.
Give
your contact information real quick.
If you're interested in the book, you can contact Coach T. You can email me at Coach T, TD, as in touchdown, at yahoo.com, or text me at 816-699-4985 for the book.
Repeat it one more time.
816-699-4985. Text me if you're interested in the book. I'll give you details. Or email at Coach T, TD, at yahoo.com.
Thank you for putting up with me and you guys. You're a man of God. I greatly appreciate it, and I hope you do more great work out there. I look forward to seeing you speak at the public library.
Yeah, right on. The name of the book is Race in America, A Call to Heal. Our guests have been Coach T, Greg Thomas, and David Smail. Gentlemen, thank you again. And we're going to let Stevie take us out here after we get a toot-toot from Khadija.
Well, toot-toot. Everybody love, peace, and hair grease.
Yeah, and thank you again for Brother Kareem, as always, taking our calls this morning. Thanks to all of our callers. We'll see you next week at 9 a.m.